This is episode 112 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. If you're not driving, and let's face it, who is, grab a piece of paper and a pencil. You're going to want to take notes on this one. If you're not doing virtual shows yet, why not? There's a huge market for it, and you can perform all over the world. Today's guest figured it out early. Maybe it was his background in film, maybe it was just necessity. But listen carefully. He has some great tips on how to make your virtual show look and sound great. Enjoy!
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world.
Stop the presses! This just in! My guest is kind enough to allow me to put all sorts of pictures of his home studio on his show notes page. So right after listening to this, go to his show notes page and you can take a look there. I'll remind you at the end. Enjoy. Again.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Voted San Francisco's best comedian and 3 times voted San Francisco's best magician. He's performed in over 40 countries in all 50 states on every major TV network and twice the White House. He has an amazing webinar on setting up your own home studio, and he produces the world's greatest marketing videos. Variety artist, I give you Robert Strong.
Hello, John.
How's it going, Robert?
Very well. I'm in the Bay Area adapting.
Oh, yeah. It's been crazy these last few months, huh?
I don't think they're crazy strong enough of a word.
Yeah, it's a whole life-changing experience.
Yeah, we'll look back at this, and hopefully we've all grown and learned and evolved and adapted from this.
Yeah, I hope so. Now, you were voted San Francisco's best comedian and best magician?
Absolutely. That was a couple different publications. They have these popularity contests, and he or she with the most friends and followers wins. So that doesn't mean I'm technically the best magician. It just means I am... I'm friendly and maybe I hoard friends.
So it should be most popular comedian and most popular magician. Is that right?
Most popular hoarder, maybe. Oh.
Now, so for people who haven't seen you, what kind of performance do you do?
I am squarely in the comedy and magic world. My specialty is customization. So I don't just say like the magic word is Lenovo. I actually learn about their data centers. I learn about their mobile products and their laptops. And I talk about the benefits and features while entertaining people with magic. And the whole idea is that people have to get the information and they can get it from an engineer, which usually their eyes gloss over and they're looking at their phone, or they can get it from me where I get their full attention with the magic. And usually they have a better recollection of the details because it's associated with a magic trick. So if you ask them questions later, the memory adheres to the ones to hundreds trick or the world's fastest card trick. And then they say, oh yeah, the data centers are fast. He talked about that with a card trick.
Right.
That's what I do. I do messaging.
I take it, by the way you're talking, they're all corporate events, mainly corporate events.
Almost all of them. I mean, I do some cabarets and burlesque shows. I do some fundraisers and galas. I do actually, one of the favorite things to do is like that TEDx world, the TEDx talks. Oh, yeah. So I kind of get invited to a lot of those different talks. And that last list is, you know, usually for fun and to feed my creative side. But mostly what I do for a living is all corporate, but specifically in the tech world. I live in Silicon Valley. So totally makes sense.
So how has this COVID-19 thing affected your business?
Oh, so when COVID-19 came out, clearly there was going to be a lot of cancellations. And then it hit like dominoes falling one after another, everything canceled. And of course, you expected that trade shows were holding on to the last possible moment to make the decision. The whole schedule vanished. So I decided right then and there to lean into something that would be fun for me that potentially could make me a lot of money. And that's probably how you found me. I have a degree in filmmaking. Hmm. And I thought, what would be fun for me to do? What would challenge me? What would play to my strengths? So I got out all my gear and I started buying new gear and I built a home studio that does more than just video conferencing.
Hmm. What do you mean by that?
So a lot of people are trying to set up a studio for performing live shows. That's one thing. Another, people are setting up their studio for video conferencing, for standing sales calls or pitches or or for meetings like that. Some people are setting up for recording videos, recorded, not live streaming. And I decided I wanted to create a DIY multifunctional studio that does all of those and even Twitch if I wanted to.
So how did you go about doing that? I guess that would be the next question.
So I spent a bunch of time ideating, just sitting there kind of going, what would it look like? I live in the Bay Area. I'm in a relatively small house. So I had to allow my wife to work from home, stay out of the way of my dog, or maybe the other way around, be able to shoot all these different things. And I had to be creative. So with that said, the first thing I started with was the foundation. I got one of those adjustable desks that goes from seated to standing. Mm-hmm. And what that would allow me to do is to do the seated calls or the standing sales calls or the performances. And then I realized if the desk goes up and down, so does the laptop, the monitor, the microphone. Also, if I clamp the light like a C-clamp to the desk and I C-clamp the camera to the desk, everything is set and I don't need to reset it. Now, if this desk were on wheels, I can rotate it 90 degrees to have a different set or background, I should say, mm-hmm. or I can wheel it into the living room where I can use my living room TV as a monitor so I can do a slideshow or just put up a logo or some kind of a static background. And I also have a light box that's a backdrop and a green screen that's a backdrop. So this whole contraption is one plug. I unplug it from the wall. I roll it through the hallway, plug it back in, and depending on where I set it, I've got six or seven different backgrounds I could use for all those different uses of video conferencing, live performances, standing sales pitches, and video production.
So according to what you're doing, you're moving your desk to whatever backdrop suits your needs.
Exactly. And when the desk raises and lowers, the light raises and lowers, so I don't really need to reset things as much as I would if I had to take it apart, move it with all the different tripods and stuff. So, and all the cables are all neatly wound and put into a cable box. So everything is self-contained.
So it's almost like a little portable studio that you move from one backdrop to the other.
Exactly.
Oh, that's brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. It took a lot of figuring out what to buy and what to source. And, you know, I was doing this when Amazon was not shipping very quickly and things were getting sold out in this realm. And so I had to be really creative how I get a hold of the gear. Some stuff I got at great deals and some things I overpaid just because necessity. You get down to everything's working, but you need one more cable, one more dongle, or one more battery adapter. And so it was a lot of adrenaline trying to get this all solved and to work together.
Well, you had to do it and to do it quickly because now everything is sold out.
Everything is not just sold out, but if you go on eBay, it's going for two or three times what the new price would have been.
Right. So a bunch of people have bought five or six of them and then they're selling it for three times the price. Yeah.
Yes.
So tell me about your portable studio. I know you went through it really quickly as far as the lighting, the camera, and the desk, the movable desk, but kind of go through step by step how you kind of put that all together and which is which.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll back up even further back. When everything was canceling, there was about 20 of us, all professionals, all top of their field, sitting on a video conference call. I was in my living room. My laptop was on my lap. I was sitting on a couch, and everybody was talking about, when are we going to get back to these high-paying corporate gigs? And I started looking at everybody's background. I started looking at everybody's lighting. I looked at the camera quality, and I looked at my own, and every time I breathed, every time I talk, my laptop would move, and it certainly did not have a professional aesthetic, and people had lights behind them. They were silhouette, and people were in their kitchen, and there was just piles of dirty dishes behind them. And I thought, wow, these are the top of their field, but when they're on a video conference call, you wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
So I realized that perception is reality, and we all create marketing videos that show us in the best light. We all create a show that we put on our best costume and get them the best lights. You know, we move in a way that is theatrical and dramatic and all that. We all make such an effort to be absolute pros, everything that's audience-facing or client-facing. But these video conference calls were like a peek behind the stage where things weren't finished and weren't painted and it was rough around the edges and all that. And I realized in that moment that I needed to up my game because all my shows and my sales and all that were going to be through video. So I started to pay attention to what everybody had and what was working. And, you know, the first thing I saw was somebody had one of those boom microphones that dropped down into the shot and it looked like they're, you know, a radio show host. And I thought, wow, that looks super professional. So I thought what I need to do is I need to create an aesthetic that I've got really great gear. And so at first, maybe because of insecurity, I started to create a setup where the gear was in the shot. So the lights were in the shot, the microphones in the shot, and it would show that I own professional gear. Then I realized I'm just a gearhead. I get excited about buying toys and all that, and that was really just insecurity and trying to show off to other people. So then I thought what I need is a really clean aesthetic that's and everything that's happening is invisible. It's almost like creating a magic trick where, the audience sees the finished product and it's polished and it's shiny and it's clean and clear image and all that, and they don't know what goes into it. Started with camera. So, well, no, you know what? Back up more. So I started with the desk. I figured out the desk was the best way to go. Small place, so I got a relatively small desk. It's 3 feet by 2 feet. And then the next thing I did was I got a chair and a monitor, plugged my laptop into it. I knew I needed a camera and started to watch YouTube videos. And I must have watched 3, 4, 5 dozen YouTube videos. To crunch through them, I'd watch them at 1.5 speed. And if you hit the right arrow, it jumps forward 5 seconds. So I could get through a lot more videos a lot more quickly. I started to see that people were starting to recommend similar things, and I would actually watch the quality and see if what they're saying matched the quality. And I decided I needed a mirrorless camera. And the reason a mirrorless DSLR camera was because there's less chance that it's going to overheat. So any camera with an HDMI out will work for live streaming, but a mirrored camera has a chance of overheating, shutting down, and right in the middle of a show that would not work.
Now, this may sound not smart of me, but what is a mirrored camera?
Let me preface this. Everything I'm saying, I sound like an expert. 3 months ago, I knew nothing about this. So I am not an expert in studios or video production. I'm an expert in the time of pandemic, getting a studio up and running and moving fast and creating something that I'm told looks successful. DSLR cameras, and this is layman terms, has a mirror that flips open. And that's how you take a photo. So there's literally a hinged mirror. It moves and it puts light on the sensor and you've got an image. A mirrorless camera doesn't have that. The light goes straight on the sensor and it's all done digitally. It's all done in software. There's less chance that the camera is going to overheat and shut down. So I determined I needed a mirrorless camera. So started researching, and the Sonys were really good, and they have HD Sony cameras. So I opted for the Sony Alpha A5100. And then next was lens. I decided I wanted a fixed lens, a prime lens that would let a lot more light in so I could get sharper focus, but also have that bokeh effect where the background is in soft focus and I'm in sharp focus. So it kind of has a film aesthetic. Once I got that worked out, I needed to get all the clamps and all that so that it sat right on top of the monitor, more or less at eye level, so that I could look at the screen, see what the audience is seeing, also see the audience, but also look up to the camera and look directly into it and look like I'm making eye contact with my audience.
Right now, let's not skip over that because that's super, super important. When you're looking
Yes.
at the screen, it doesn't look like you're looking at anybody. But when you're looking
Right.
at the camera, you're looking right into somebody's eyes, right?
Well, luckily right now, people's brains are adapting, and when someone's looking at the screen and not directly at the camera, it is acceptable because the whole world's doing it. However, I am making an extra special effort to look directly into the lens when I'm talking to my audience. One of the things that helps is a lot of times people put post-it notes or arrows or something that points right to the lens to remind them to look into the lens. The camera I got, not all the Sonys have it, but the camera I have has a flip-up screen which sits right above the lens. So I've got my monitor, the lens, and right above that, a tiny little monitor. So it allows my eyes to come up and focus there and see what the audience sees in the tiny little flip-up screen.
And it looks like you're looking directly into the camera.
It looks like, and it's better for connections. I've watched audiences react to virtual shows, and they respond faster and more enthusiastic when the performer's looking right into the lens. There's a little bit of a disconnect when the performer's looking off to the side, at the monitor to see what the audience sees. And yeah, people don't feel as connected. The next thing I needed was you can't take the image directly from your camera into your computer. There's lots of processing. Your computer will be slow, there'll be latency, and when you're doing a live show that's interactive, you really need to minimize that latency as much as possible. So there's something called a HDMI capture device with a USB cable, and I think it's USB-C if you have a Mac computer. And I'm got the Magewell, not because I like it better, but it was the one I was able to get while everything was shut down. So I end up, by the way, duplicating everything. So I've got two cameras, two sets of lights, two HDMI capture cards, two everything. So that way I can do a two camera shoot and switch between them.
How do you switch between them?
Right now I'm doing the shortcut in Zoom of Alt N, allows me to toggle through all the cameras. Right. And one of the problems was I was toggling through the camera that was built into my laptop, which is nowhere near the quality of the others. So I went into my laptop and permanently turned off that camera. So when you hit Alt N, it toggles between all the cameras. So I've got two right now and it toggles back and forth.
And both of those are plugged into your computer?
Both those are plugged into USB cables into my computer. However, I am keeping my eyes on different switching devices, physical switching devices. And the reason is if I take the processing out of the computer, there's less chance of there going to be a glitch or latency or some problem like the sound not syncing up with the video. Video is super important, but sound is even more important. People will watch a low quality image if the sound quality is good, but people will tune out and shut down and turn off if the sound quality is, if it's just hard to understand. So right. Sound is far more important than I think people in our field give it credit for. But I'm looking for a switching device, and ultimately the idea is that I will have physical buttons that I can hit for camera one, camera two, fade, or picture in picture. What that will do is allow the keyboard and the screens to free up space for the broadcast. I won't have to switch between windows to be able to get to the window to switch. So ultimately that would be the best thing to do. They're hard to find right now.
Sure. And I want to emphasize the sound being so important, because it is. You know, I just recently bought a little mixing board and Audio Ape and a couple of different things to make my sound great. What you're saying is absolutely true.
Do you want me to talk about sound for a minute? Because I had a bit of a steep learning curve, and I know a lot about sound right now.
Sure, please go.
Getting a professional microphone makes a world difference. And you know what? I think if I switch screens, I can show you what most magicians sound like with just a few keystrokes. Let's do it. I've got to back out of that. I've got to go to the call. So what I'm going to do now is in the call, I'm going to switch to the microphone that's built into my computer.
Okay.
Good quality for a laptop.
Now I can't hear what I sound like because I'm not wearing a headset, but can you hear a sound difference?
Yeah, it sounds echoey and like you're in a big empty room.
So that is what is built into most computers. And then I got a professional
microphone. I'm switching back. It now should be back on the professional microphone, and it has a completely different sound quality.
Yes, much warmer, and it cancels out any background noise. It sounds like you're right there as opposed to in a big echoey room.
Right. So there's a lot on sound. So I'll just kind of power through, and you can stop me and slow me down if you want to back up on anything. First, when you're if you're using a Zoom call, they compress the sound. You can turn the compression off so it's actually the natural sound. The reason is when it does the compression of sound, what will happen is we'll get this like tinty, echoey, kind of springy sound. Mm-hmm. With the way I have it set up is if I have a poor connection, the sound will just cut out for a moment, but it'll continue in real time and won't have that weird kind of bouncy, springy, echoey sound. So I got specifically the Blue Yeti microphone. You don't need a super expensive one. You just probably need one that's not built into the computer, so you don't have to spend a fortune.
That's what I'm talking in right now, by the way.
Yeah, they're very good microphones. They're kind of becoming the industry standard for streaming and podcast. Yep. Another option is you can get a wired or wireless lapel microphone, and that works really well. You set the gain on all of these relatively as low as you possibly can, so it's not picking up all the echoey sounds and sounds that are in the house, like the refrigerator and the washing machine and, you know, water running in the toilets and all that. So you want to lower the gain on everything. The lapel microphone works really well. It's a very inexpensive solution, but two warnings. One is it has a little watch size battery in it. You want to make sure you get extra watch size batteries, because when that battery goes dead and you need it for a show, it could take with Amazon 2 weeks for the batteries to arrive.
Yeah.
Second is if you move a lot and you've got big bulky costumes, if you have sleeves and you're doing linking rings and your sleeves are rubbing up against the material of your jacket, the lapel microphone might pick up all those sounds. So that might not be the best solution for you. Another is like a Rode microphone, or I think it's pronounced Rode microphone. And that's the one that usually goes on top of the camera. That works fantastic if the subject is 2 or 3 feet from the camera. But as soon as the subject gets a full body shot and is 7 or 12 feet from the camera, it doesn't pick up so well. So what you can do is you can put it on a boom arm and get an extending cable so that the Rode microphone is just out of the shot above the performer, kind of like what the old Johnny Carson show had, the boom microphone that would dip down, was aimed at the talent.
Right.
That is a good solution. But no matter which one you choose, you want to deaden the room. Two ways to think about it is just putting down rug on the floor and old towels and blankets and bathrobes and ski jackets and all that on every surface that is a hard surface to just absorb sound. Another way to think about it is like the stealth fighters, which don't reflect radar directly. It scatters it because all the surfaces are at different angles.
Yeah.
If you can break up the room into as many different angles, you won't get that slapback of sound that sounds really echoey that you hear in a lot of people's garages, basements, living rooms.
Right. Kitchen. Most entertainers listening to this, they've done performances in gymnasiums, for example, that are square. And all you hear is all the echo or an NPR room that is square. But if you have that nice vaulted ceiling or some sort of angle with the walls, it helps a lot.
Yeah. Literally, go find all your old blankets and comforters and all that. And everything that's not visually in the shot, drape it over everything, hanging over chairs. I've got some chairs I bring into the room and I just drape them over. And so ideally, in a perfect world, you would have soundproofing all over the walls and ceilings and floors. But a lot of people who record audio only go into their clothing closet. They put a blanket over their head. They have their laptop with a light and they speak directly into the microphone and they get the most dead sound, which is a really good sound. Mm-hmm. All the ambient stuff is absorbed. So those are some solutions on the microphone. Some people use headsets and stuff like that, but for magic, that's probably not the most appealing solution.
Especially when you're on video, right?
Yeah, especially when you're on video, yeah.
Is there anything else?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Lighting is super important, and I think that's where a lot of people make mistakes. I'll try to break it down. What you're looking for is on you, the subject matter, you're looking for soft, even light, no harsh shadows, and you want to be in light. In an ideal situation, if this was a TV show or a film, we'd be completely inside. We'd black out the windows so that there's no natural light. And we would start with a room that is absolutely black. The next thing you do is you light your background. So you want a nice even light in the background and you want it to be motivated light. In other words, if there is strong light in the background, but there's no light source or the light source is coming from the wrong direction, there's a table lamp, but shadows are going the wrong directions from the point of the table lamp. What you want to do is you want to add what's called motivated light. So you light the background so you've got a nice clean image. Then you put the subject matter between the camera lens and the background. And then you light the back. This is counterintuitive, but you light the back of the performer to the camera. What they see is a silhouette. Now you're ready to light the performer from the front. And you usually do a key light and a fill light. If you have a nice small room that has lots of white walls, you can do a key light and a bounce board or a key light and just bounces off the walls. And you ultimately want between you and the light. If something is between you and the light, you don't want harsh shadows on you. You want nice, soft, fuzzy shadows. And the reason I say we start with a completely blacked out room is if we're going to edit a video, and as the sun moves throughout the day, even over the course of a few minutes, the color temperature is going to change and the shadows are going to get longer, shorter, or change angles. And when you edit something together, like magic, when something doesn't make sense, takes the spectator out of it for a moment and they go, something doesn't feel right. I think they're hiding something in their arm or their hand. Sure. Or all that. When the shadows jump in the wrong direction, it takes the spectator out of it and they're not enjoying the content. Same with not having motivated light. If there's shadows coming from the wrong angle from a air quote motivated light, it takes the person out of it and goes, that is not how reality works.
Sure. It's
like dropping a ball and it goes up. Gravity works backwards. And you're looking at lighting, it's like lighting is wrong. So you really want to make it look like natural lighting. And it takes a lot of faking to do that, just like a magic trick. It takes a lot of work to make something look really, really natural.
In fact, this is kind of low tech, but one of the things that I do in my living room, I have a studio set up in my living room, is the first thing I do, even before I set up any tables or any camera, anything, is I cover all the windows with blankets.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I do, because I never know what time of day, whether it's nighttime or morning or late afternoon, harsh light. And I've noticed when I first started putting it together before I put up the blankets, that there was a big harsh light on the side of my face. And the whole right side of my face was lit up.
And you'll never get a consistent product if you're always shooting at different times of day and you're relying on natural light.
Right.
If it's a live streaming show, I will rely on natural light because over the course of a half an hour, the brain and the eye won't notice a slow change of lighting. and there's no edit, so they're not going to see any kind of jump cuts of that. You can use natural light, especially if you have to.
For a live show.
For a live show is optimal. Or if you're going to do something in absolutely one take, you can do that. But as soon as you know you're going to edit the video, it's not ideal to use natural light.
Right. A lot of work to make it look right.
Yeah.
To make it look natural. A lot of faking to make it look natural.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So now we've gone over lighting, camera, sound, your desk, which I think is just a great idea, and backgrounds. Is that it?
I mean, there's a million small choices that you make, but I mean, like if the background is right now, I have a little bit of a busy background. So I tend to wear solid colors when I perform. And you want to look for not using patterns that will moiré. It's kind of like stripes or zebra stripes or checks or plaid or whatever. When it changes size, you get this kind of electric moiré pattern. You want to try your best to avoid that with solid colors or big patterns.
One of the suggestions has nothing to do with patterns, but one of the suggestions I heard was to create an environment that is not 2D, which means, you know, you're 4 feet away from the camera, 3 feet away from the camera. Don't stay at that 3 feet. Move in, move out. Study late night talk show hosts, because that's what they do to make themselves larger, smaller, create a 3D image.
You always think about the tableau in a live show that you create for the audience. It's the same for the camera. You always want to be aware of what's in the foreground, midground, and background. And you want it to be a three-dimensional show, so you light it that way. But like I said, if you have really good lighting, a great camera, and great lens, you get that bokeh effect. One of the things I learned is if I have it on autofocus, I could not do manual focus because I move. But if I do it on autofocus, people become aware of the focus because it's constantly changing. So I slowed down the focus. So it takes about a second for things to go into focus after I move. And that's a little bit more natural how the eye sees, and they become less aware that they're watching a camera.
Mm.
That's a little trick. You want to think about the camera angle. You want it to be, you know, eye level. If it's above, it makes you diminutive, but it also could be good for comedy. If it's below, it's not a very flattering look, but also could make you look like a superhero if you have good lighting.
A superhero with a giant chin.
With a giant, how many chins? Yeah. With how much I've been sheltering and eating all of them. You want to think about the lens. A 50 millimeter is what they shoot for magazines. It's how the eye sees things. It's a nice look, but if you don't have a lot of space, you can't use a 50 millimeter. I'm using a 16 millimeter because this room is relatively small and it allows me to get a full body shot in without being very far from the camera.
I use a camera that only gets, I don't know, 3/4 of my body, I think. So I have to adjust my show or whatever I'm doing to that.
Yes.
And know that it's always in the shot. I can't just go crazy.
One thing that I think is really, really important is I'd say I'm seeing a third of the conversation on social media about people shutting down and not leaning into this. And I see this as a really great opportunity to grow and evolve and change. Our stage, you know, was a living room or a trade show or a literal theater. We adapted to that. And then at some point, magicians got on radio. They adapted to that. Then television and film, they adapted to that. David Blaine adapted to the fact that you get man on the street and get lots of reactions. And, you know, Chris Angel adapted to the fact that people could share YouTube videos. And then the younger guys, you know, got an Instagram and Snapchat and they adapted to it. So I try to look at it as a medium that what magic can I create in that? And if I could tell everybody to get a deck of cards out and do a magic trick where we all do it in parallel, that's totally leaning into it. I think it's a great opportunity to create things that we couldn't have created if we were doing a strolling gig or an in-person gig.
Yeah, and your point with the cards, it's interesting because live, when we do a card trick or some sort of volunteer trick, we're using one or two volunteers. Whereas if you're doing a Skype call, you can use 80 volunteers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, enough of those shows. Whew, I'm sweating over here.
Yeah.
So completely off the subject, you did a series called Comedy Talks. What was that all about?
It was Comedy Talks, Conversations with the Legends of Comedy, and it's by far the best thing I've ever worked on in my life and career, and I'm so, so proud of it. What happened was, the origin story, I think, is interesting for performers. Every once in a while, I'd fly down to Hermosa Beach and perform at the Comedy Magic Club at Hermosa. I'd be in that little cinder block green room, and big stars like Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno and Gary Shandling, and the list is just so long, would just come through and sit in that green room, and I'd be hanging out with them, sharing stories and all that. And then it would be time for me to do my 8 or 9 minutes, and I would think, I don't want to leave this room. I don't want to miss a story. I'm hanging on every word of it. And so I remember being on stage for my 9 minutes, doing the best I can to perform for the audience that is in front of me. But in my head, I'm thinking they would enjoy being in that room, a fly on the wall, eavesdropping to that conversation rather than watching me. That's so much better.
Yeah.
These are funny people that have funny stories. They know how to tell funny stories. They do it in a funny way. So I had this idea for a TV show called Comedy Talks. So I mentioned it to my friend Juliana Gallen. She's like, I love the idea. Let's do it. Next thing I know, I'm producing. I shot 3 live shows in a 500-seat theater. It really worked. So the first show we had, I should probably go to the screen. It's so long ago. It was 2010. I brought up a screen so I could see the list. The second show is easy to remember. I had Carol Channing from Broadway. Yeah. I had Rich Little, the impersonator, and Steve Rossi. Steve Rossi had the most interesting stories because everywhere in history, something that happened, he was there. Mm-hmm. You talk about the Bay of Pigs. He's like, oh yeah, I was at the White House during the Bay of Pigs. And you talk about like the Beatles coming to America. And he's like, oh yeah, we're the act that went on after them. And he just had so many great stories. The other show we had, Robert Morris from How to Succeed in Business. We had Will Durst, the political satirist.
Yeah.
We had Shelley Berman, the comedian and actor and television star. The first show we had Paul Mazursky, the director, and we had George Segal, the actor. The formula was really, really just right. Right around that time, there were a lot of comedian on comedian shows coming out. They were good, but I don't think they hit the mark as well as I did, with all humility and all that. Me, I was a younger guy looking into a window of an older generation. Mm. So they were not my peers. I was showing lots of respect and lots of learning from them, just getting their wisdom. The next thing was, it was a panel. And they all knew each other and liked each other. So we created panels where the people had history together.
Yeah. By the way, a lot of people listening to this don't know who a lot of those people are.
I know.
These are big, big names from the 60s, 70s, earlier, or even earlier. Shelley Berman, even earlier. Yeah,
even earlier, you know, Shelley Berman had the first record to go, I don't know if it was gold or platinum, and it was a comedy record. George Segal is a prolific actor who's won lots of big awards. These are the first people that, for people's entire lifetime, they saw them.
Yeah.
Prior to that, it was, you know, touring shows, but these are, you know, pioneers in radio and television, and people grew up with them their whole lives, and they really knew them. Like, they really, when they interacted with them, they felt like they knew everything they've written, everything they've acted in, they've participated in their lives from a distance.
Well, just for context, a couple people. Carol Channing, I saw her in the original Hello Dolly here in L.A.
Yes.
In, I don't know, the 70s or something. On one of my shows, on one of my podcasts, Bob Fitch tells a fascinating story about when he worked with Carol Channing years and years ago. One of my favorite things I was watching of yours is where Rich Little, who back then was a famous impersonator, he does Carol Channing in front of Carol Channing.
And she had never seen that before. She immediately goes, "You sound like my father." Which was great. And what was great is, you know, she's aged at the time and was not very, not moving physically a lot. And she was also definitely not performing or singing. Rich Little impersonates her and sings Hello Dolly. And then she just takes the microphone, chimes in, and finishes the song. And it was like, that's something that no audience has seen in 20 years is, you know, her singing that and performing. And it was just such a great duo and moment. They were both so excited because he's never performed Carol Channing to her, and she's never live seen Rich Little imitate her. So it was magic. In that show, there was like 7 standing ovations that just happened organically.
That is magic. I watched that this morning, and I got chills, you know.
That was the thing. I still get messages. People like, the hair stood up on the back of my neck during that show. It was so engaging. It, to me, I really think it has a place. And now that people have streaming services, maybe you'll find a home on Hulu or Netflix or Amazon Prime, because we professionally recorded all of them. They look and sound great.
Well, let's talk about your Facebook group. What's the name of your Facebook group?
So I started a group in 2007, early Facebook, called All Magicians and Jugglers on Facebook. And it's a great conversation on everything performing related, from business to costume, to lighting, to sound, to props, to character, to you name it. If it's part of show business, it's discussed there.
It's a busy group. I'm on there.
I think got more than 14,000 members. And I try my best to keep everything positive, and I try my best to keep spammers out, and I try my best to keep it a smart conversation where it adds value for people. So definitely join the group if you're not already a member. And if you are a member, please participate.
Yeah, please. In fact, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks, Robert, for doing my show. That was great. That was fun. I learned a lot, and I'm going to go back and listen over and over again. I love all the ideas that you're bringing up.
Awesome. Thank you for your time.
And how can we learn more about either your videos or Facebook group, all of that kind of stuff?
Social media? Facebook group, just search for All Magicians and Jugglers on Facebook. If you want to learn about me, my website is strongentertainment.com. If you go on YouTube, I think more interesting things, if you search my name, Robert Strong, and look for TEDx videos, I've done 10 or 12 TEDx talks, and I customize each one. Some are better than others, but each of them have something fun that happens, something fun and surprising.
Yeah, I watched a couple of those this morning. I love the one where you take your hand off.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was doing a talk about assumptions.
Yeah.
I love talking on the neuroscience of magic. To me, that's a very interesting topic.
Well, perfect. Thanks to all my Variety Artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist podcast. And thank you to you, Robert, for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Here's your reminder. Make sure to go to Robert's show notes page and take a look at all the pics of his home studio. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.